The following message is presented by Mooringsport Baptist Church in Mooringsport, Louisiana. For more information, go to the website www.mooringsportbaptistchurch.org. Now the message.
Today I've felt led for a couple of weeks now to move in the direction of the passage in 2 Kings. If you will open your Bible there, I want to read a passage that will set the stage for the message of the morning. 2 Kings chapter 7, if you would, please. And we'll read verses 3 through 9. 2 Kings chapter 7, verses 3 through 9. I'm reading again from the New English Version. And I'm starting verse 3 and reading on through verse 9. Now, there were four men who were lepers at the entrance to the gate. That is the gate of the city. And they said, that Samaria is the city, capital of the northern kingdom. And they said to one another, why are we sitting here till we die? If we say, let's enter the city, the famine's in the city, and we'll die there. If we said, here, we'll die also. So now, come, let's go over to the camp of the Syrians. If they spare our lives, we shall live. And if they kill us, we're going to die anyway. If we sit here, we'll die. If we go into the city, we'll die. They may kill us, but on the other hand, they may give us food. So they rose at twilight to go to the camp of the Syrians. But when they came to the edge of the camp of the Syrians, behold, there was no one there. For the Lord had made the army of the Syrians hear the sound of chariots and of horses, the sound of a great army. So that they said to one another, behold, the king of Israel has hired against us the kings of the Hittites to the north, that's Asia Minor, or modern-day Turkey, and the kings of Egypt, that's to the south, to come against us. So they fled away in the twilight and abandoned their tents, their horses, their donkeys, leaving the camp as it was, and they fled for their lives. And when the lepers came to the edge of the camp, they went into a tent, and ate and drank. They carried off silver and gold and clothing and went and hid them. Then they came back and entered another tent and carried off things from it and went and hid them. Then they said to one another, we're not doing right. This day is a day of good news. If we are silent and wait till the morning light, punishment will overtake us. Now, therefore, come, let's go and tell the king's household. Let us go and tell. Their ancient enemies from Syria, keep these words separate. Their ancient enemies from Syria had marched on Samaria, the capital of the northern kingdom. You remember after the death of Solomon, the kingdom divided into the kingdom of Judah in the south, the kingdom of Israel in the north, and the people of Israel built a brand new capital up in Samaria. So enemies from Syria marched on Samaria. This capital of the northern kingdom sat on a mountain peak. The sides were so steep, and they ran hundreds of feet up from the valley floor. In fact, the walls at the top of those hills, those sides, mountain sides, were 60 feet high. Think of it, 60 feet high. And they were so wide that five chariots could drive side by side around the top of those walls. In other words, they were too tall to climb and too thick to break. So the Syrians, after surveying the situation, said, what we need to do is starve them out. And so they set a siege line around the city and just waited. Well, inside the city, food quickly became scarce. And we're told a little at the end of, up in chapter 6, actually, that the head of a donkey sold for a small fortune in silver. In fact, if my calculations are correct, it was about 2 pounds of silver. Think what silver sells at an ounce these days, and then reckon in what 2 pounds of silver would have cost. That's the head of a donkey. Now, that's unreal to me. I mean, I just can hardly fathom that because the donkey was an unclean animal, and yet here are these people paying good money for unclean meat, anything to eat. And besides, there's just not a lot of edible parts on the head of a donkey. Maybe it's ears, it's tongue, it's eyeballs. You know, you can't scrape a whole lot of good meat off the head of a donkey. You have to think about hogshead cheese, I guess. Donkey head cheese. I'm not sure what they would have done with it, but it was an unclean animal, not a lot of edible meat on the head of a donkey, and yet it sold for 2 pounds of silver. In the earlier chapter, we're also told that a half pint of dove's dung sold for 2 ounces of silver. Now, was that really the droppings of a dove? So they made like bird drop soup? I don't know. I tend to believe that this was not the droppings of a dove, dove's dung. This was the name that they gave to a wildflower that grew in the area. Nowadays, it's called Star of Bethlehem. And the roots of that little flower are still cooked and eaten in Israel and in the Holy Land. So I think that probably was what that was. But a half pint of it sold for 2 ounces of silver. The situation got so grim that we're told in the previous chapter, chapter 6, that two mothers agreed that they would eat their own children. Each of them had a son. They did kill and eat one of them, and then the second one said, no, not doing that, and took the case to the king, and the king said, you can't do that. So I want you to get the scene, all right? Outside, the Syrian troops were waiting for the Sumerians to starve or to surrender. Inside, there were a bunch of desperate people who were just struggling and fighting to stay alive. But the Bible zooms in on a third group, a little band of lepers in no man's land between the walls of the city and the camp of the Syrians. Normally, they lived on alms that kind-hearted people had given them. But after all, it was a famine, and there weren't many alms available. And besides, the city was locked down tight. There was no way to get in to where anyone may have given them alms, if you see. So after days and days and days with nothing to eat, so much so that they were starving, they came to a crisis. We have three options, they said in the passage we read a moment ago. We got three options. We can sit here till we die. There's no food here, and we will die. We can go and ask admission into the city. They may not let us in. They may kill us at the gate. But if we get in, there's no food there. We'll die there too. The only hope we have is to go to the enemy camp. They may run us off. They may kill us. But they might feed us. That's our only hope. And so at twilight, they crept out of their hiding place near the city walls and made their way to the camp of the Syrians. Now, there was something that none of the Sumerians knew. God had been at work. He is always at work when we least expect it. Like they used to say on Candid Camera, you know, when you least expect it, God's at work. When you can't see it, God's at work. When you don't know it, God's at work. So when they didn't know this. They'd had no clue. They discovered that God had been at work, and he had made the Syrians hear the sound of horses and chariots and the foot tread of a marching army. It terrified them because they said, he sent for the Hittites from Asia Minor. He has sent for the Egyptian. The king of Israel has sent for help from north and south, and these troops and chariots and horses are marching on us, and it terrified them. Panic spread like fire. So to the last man, in a panic, every Syrian bolted from their tents and fled in fear. So when these lepers came to the camp, they didn't find a single soldier anywhere. They went in the first tent, and they could not believe their eyes. A feast was spread as if they'd been expecting guests there. On a spit over a charcoal fire, a lamb roasted. On the table stood skins of wine and chunks of cheese and loaves of bread and a pot of honey. These four men who'd been starving fell on that food and gorged themselves with the food. And when they could eat no more, they noticed there were treasures in that tent. There was silver and gold and rich garments. And they grabbed those, carried them away, dug little holes like dogs burying bones, and buried those treasures for their own use. Then they went back to a second tent and scavenged it the same way, just stripped it of its treasures and went and buried them. Then their consciences kicked in. Just yards away from where they stood, just yards away from the Syrian camp, in the city, people starved. In the camp, there was plenty for everybody. And so at once they said, this is not good. We need to go tell everybody where there's food to eat and treasure to spare. So within an hour, the famine turned to feast and fear turned to freedom because they went and told the good news. Now, had someone been there to video this event, I would select from that video three frames, because three frames would show the lepers in three different lights. Each frame suggests to me a different kind of Christian. And as we move through this discussion today, I want you to ask, what kind of Christian am I? I almost said, what kind of leper am I? But scratch that. What kind of Christian am I? Which of these three frames represent me? I don't want you to check your neighbor. Check yourself. All right? Don't think about what other people might be, what kind they might be. Think about what kind you are. In the first frame, the lepers are sitters. Inside the city, huddled starving people. Outside the city, camp these Syrian soldiers. In the middle, somewhere around the city gates, these four men just sat. They were sitters. Unfortunately, most Christians, in my experience, are like lepers in this frame. They're sitters. The city of this world is under fierce attack by the Dark Lord and his hellish host. And in the city of this world, people die every day with never a taste of the bread of heaven, never a sip of the water of life. They die hungry and hopeless, and most Christians just sit. We just sit. Sitters are interesting people. At some point in the past, while the preacher had preached and the choir was singing, "Just As I Am," they felt some movement of God in their life, and so they came down an aisle and joined a church. And the pastor said to them, "If you will, just sit right here and fill out this card of information." I think most sitters mistook that for the Great Commission. They sat and never got up. When I was a pastor, I quit asking people to sit down. I say, stand here and fill out this information. Come and stand with me, because we're going to put you to work. We don't want you to just sit. And I'm afraid if I have you sit, you won't ever get up. And that seems to me to be what many, many Christians have done. They've been seated ever since they joined the church. So here's the question. Can most of what you've done for God lately be described as sitting? You sit in a class, Sunday school class. You sit in a conference. You sit at a convention. You sit in a choir. You sit on a committee. You sit in a comfortable pew. Churches are full of sitters. People who think if they made it to church and sat, they've done their duty to God. Now, it doesn't matter what you call a sitter. You can even call him a preacher, because a lot of preachers sit better standing up. I don't know if that came out right or not, but it's true. A lot of my compadres are sitters. They're sitters. They don't do much. They just sit. They sit in their office. They sit in their car. They sit at home. They're sitters. Doesn't matter what you call them. You can call them a deacon or an usher, or you can call them whatever. While the few work themselves into an early grave, sitters do nothing but sit. And because they do nothing, listen, they become experts at why things cannot be done. Usually there are enough sitters around to elect the best sitters to the most influential places in church so they can keep things at a standstill. And because they have nothing else to do, sitters become experts in complaining and whining and fussing and finding fault and criticizing. They don't do anything. They just sit. So I ask you this question again. Can most of what you've done for God lately be described as just sitting? Just sitting. Sitters. Well, in the second frame, these lepers become getters. They had a surprise when they got to the Syrian camp. I've told you already, God not only had saved them from the enemy, he had given them an unbelievable abundance of food and of goods. And so what did these men do? They gorged themselves on the food and they hid all the treasure for themselves. Like one of these lepers, a getter is a Christian who finds one day to his absolute surprise that God has provided vast treasures in the Christian faith, far more than he ever dreamed possible. So he sets out to get it for himself. And so a getter digs into books. They buy books from every place. They buy books and read books and books and books. They devour DVDs and podcasts and blogs and tapes. They go to conference after conference and tramp from church to church, getting, gathering information, storing up treasures, feeding on spiritual food. Now, a getter is better and better off than a sitter is, but a getter easily goes wrong. He never shares what he gets. He remains only a getter and never a giver. Can I ask you a question? Could it be that you're in just one more tent today? In tent 3 or tent 4, tent 5? Are you just in another tent today? I know people who study 1st, 2nd, 3rd John, and by that I mean John Calvin, John Piper, and John MacArthur, if those names ring any bells with you. But they're just getting. They go to conference after conference, but they're just getting. They're piling up information and growing spiritually, I hope, but they're just getting. Some claim Kay Arthur and Beth Moore and Anne Graham Lotz as their mentors, and they feast on the good Bible studies those women produce. But these people are just getting. I'm just getting. I'm getting a better understanding of the Word. I'm growing as a Christian. I'm growing spiritually. But they're just getting. Others focus on Leviticus, or focus on the book of Daniel, or focus on Revelation, and they dig deeply into those or some other hard-to-understand Bible book, but they're just getting. Others research the signs and time of the second coming, and they defend pre-trib or post-trib or mid-trib, but they're just getting. Just getting. They run from one tent to another, stuff themselves with spiritual food and store up spiritual treasures. They get fat and rich spiritually. But in the city, behind the walls of want and fear and ignorance, the masses die without Jesus, without spiritual life. Getters, can much of what you've done for God lately be described as just getting? Just getting. Better to be a getter than a sitter. But sitters can go awfully wrong because that is if they never share. In the last frame you would see the lepers as tellers. God had saved Samaria. God had given them food to break the drought and break the famine. He had given them goods for an abundant life. Those are facts. Those were established facts. But the people did not know. These lepers stuffed themselves and hid great gobs of treasure. But just 100 yards away, the Samaritans lived in hopelessness and died in horror. The people of the city needed good news. And the lepers saw they had to go and tell. Two things I would call to your attention. Two things stand out. First of all, they recognized there was sin in silence. We do not well, they said. It's not well that we do this. We are out here stuffing ourselves and saving up all the treasure for ourselves, but it's not a good thing we're doing. There is sin in silence. I can't tell you the number of Christians I've met who said, well, I just let my life be my witness. I don't have to talk about Jesus. I'll just let my life be my witness. Well, there's a good Greek word for that strategy. Baloney. Baloney. It doesn't work that way. Had that had the lepers used that strategy, you know what they would have done? They would have simply walked into the city with bulging bellies and gravy on their beards and let people try to figure out, where did they find food? Why do they have full bellies and gravy on their beards and we've had nothing? It doesn't work that way. I don't believe anybody lives such a beautiful life that others just look at them and say, gosh, that's a beautiful life, and I know it must be Jesus who made it that way. They may see the beautiful life, but they'll never know it's Jesus who made it that way unless you talk, unless you verbalize it and say, the Lord has blessed me. Look what God has done in my life. There is sin in silence. And the people of Samaria would have starved with abundant food just 100 yards away had the lepers not told where to find bread. Indeed, a beautiful Christian life without saying Jesus made it so is an uninterpreted parable. People look at it, but they don't know its meaning. Others will never find salvation till you open your mouth and verbalize the gospel and talk to them about Jesus Christ. The second thing that stands out is that there's not only sin and silence, there's danger and delay. I love the King James translation of this. It says, they said, if we don't go tell, some mischief will come upon us. What was that? What mischief are they talking about? What was the threat? I think it's all the more ominous for being indefinite. They didn't say what the mischief was. They didn't say what penalty they would pay. They didn't say what punishment would fall, but they said, if we don't go tell, something bad's going to happen to us. And in the pages of the New Testament, I can see some of it. In Revelation 2:5, for example, the Lord of the lampstand said, I'll remove your lampstand. What does that mean? I don't know. I don't think I want to know. I prefer not to know. I don't want him removing the lampstand of the church I'm a member of, because I've been negligent. In Ezekiel, the Lord said, I've set you as a watchman to the house of Israel, and if the enemy comes and you warn them and they pay no attention, it's not your problem. But if the enemy comes and you don't warn them, I will require at the hand of a silent watchman the blood of those that perish. What does God do when he requires that at my hand or your hand? I don't know. I don't want to know. I really don't want to know. All I know is God will hold us accountable. You know, we obsess over what's going to happen to people who've never heard the gospel. You ever heard that discussed? You may have heard a sermon on it. If not, I may preach one soon. What happens to people who never hear the name of Jesus? What happens to them? And there are people who talk about that all the time. I think that's the wrong question. The real question is, what will happen to us if we don't go tell them? What will happen to you? What will happen to you? To you? Not what will happen to them. What will happen to your friends and your neighbors who die without Christ if you never tell them? That's the wrong question. What will happen to you if you never tell them? Those who know must go and tell the good news. Come, let us go. Let us go and tell. And that's God's plan of action for his city. Right now, Christians in the camp glut themselves on praise and worship music, gobble up the bread of heaven, guzzle the water of life, gather unsearchable riches for themselves, but all the while in the city live thousands who think there is no escape from their problems, no help for them. They've simply given up in despair. In the city, people starve. In the city, people are desperate. In the city, people die with no hope. And those of us who know where there is spiritual food and hope and life must go and tell the good news. Now, will they listen? These lepers didn't know. If we go into the city, they may kill us. They may not let us in. They may refuse to listen, et cetera, et cetera. The people of the city may not listen to you if you share the good news. They may ridicule you. They may run you out of town. They may kill you. But it is not right to sit in a tent enjoying all the riches while they in the city starve and die. Sitters. Getters. Tellers. Can anything you've done for God lately be described as telling? Telling. Telling. This story and I'm done. Sam was the best fisherman in his part of the state. When nobody else had fish, Sam had fish. And everybody wanted to know where his honey hole was. They wanted to know, where's your sweet spot? Where are you getting these fish? Where do you fish? And Sam wouldn't tell them. One day the game warden said, Sam, I'm going to lean on you. You have got to take me to your favorite fishing spot. Sam said, okay, be ready in the morning. So Sam picked up the game warden in the morning. They drove to a nearby lake, put the boat in, paddled out to the middle of the lake and dropped an anchor. And Sam, from his tackle box, pulled a stick of dynamite, lit it, threw it about 15 yards away. Kawoom! Went the explosion. And stunned fish floated to the top all around them. Sam got his dip net and started dipping the fish out of the water. The game warden, when he found his voice, went ballistic. Sam, you can't do that. You can't dynamite fish. Well, man, I could fine you a ton of money and put you in jail. I could put you under the jail for what you just did. Very calmly, Sam reached back into the tackle box and pulled out a second stick of dynamite, lit it, and handed it to the game warden. He said, you want a fuss or you want a fish? Somebody needs to stand up in every church in this nation and ask that question. Do you folks want a fuss or do you want a fish? Two different directions. And far too many churches have decided, guess what? We'll just fuss. We'll fuss about the color of the carpet. We'll fuss about the way the preacher combs his hair, if he has any. We'll fuss about everything. Oh, we love each other. It's a good-natured fuss, but we're just going to fuss. But the Lord wants us rather to fish, doesn't he? He wants us to fish. He wants us to be a goer and teller. Let's go share the good news. Let's go out and tell people who need to know Jesus that they can find spiritual food and spiritual riches in the Lord Jesus Christ. I'll guarantee you there are people who live in the shadow of this church who have not had a visit from anybody from this church in 10 years, 20 years, some of them 30 years. Nobody has come to say, can we talk about Jesus? Can we just talk about the Lord? Do you know him? What I want us to do for an invitation today is not sing. I will ask for music, but I don't want us to sing. I want you to think and pray. I have two questions. Number one, is there a friend or a colleague or a neighbor, maybe a former classmate, or someone you work with, that you are reasonably sure needs to know Jesus? Now, I know God hadn't put you in charge of that. It's like, you know, he didn't ask you, you know, well, what do you think? And he never will. But you're reasonably sure they do not know Jesus the way you know Jesus. And I'm going to ask you today, before the Lord, not before this group or before my face or anything else, but I want to ask you, before the Lord, will you commit to being a teller? God, give me an opportunity. open a door, and if it scares the bejesus out of me, I'm going to walk through it and talk to them about Jesus. That's the commitment I'm asking you to make today, to try to share with hungry people where they can find bread. The second question is this. If you don't know anybody like that, if there's nobody like that in your life, first of all, shame on you. You need to always be building relationship with people with the idea of sharing Christ with them. But if you will this day say to God, God, I don't know anybody quite like that. I don't have any real close people that I think need to know Jesus the way I know him. But if you will lead somebody by, if you will lead somebody by, I this day commit to being faithful to talk to them about Jesus. Now be careful, because God's going to do that. Hey, I've prayed that prayer several times. Lord, just lead me to some soul today. Remember that song we used to sing? Lead them to me. And I was so busy the next day talking to people about Jesus, I didn't have time to do anything else. The Lord, he does that. And I'm going to ask you, if you don't know anybody, will you commit to the Lord? God, if you bring somebody by that needs to know about the bread of life and the water of life in Jesus Christ, I this day commit, I will broach that conversation to them. I didn't say, I will lead them to become a Christian. That's, again, not your department. God never sent you out to do that, to make Christians out of people. He never sent you out to do that. He sent you out to bear witness. And you know what? You can't fail. No way to fail. You may not lead them to Christ, but if you bear witness to them, you've borne witness to them, and that's what he sent you to do. Just bear witness to the Savior. So, one or two things. We're going to listen to some music here with heads bowed and eyes closed, and I want you to search through your memory. Is there somebody in my life right now whom I'm pretty sure needs to know Jesus? And I will commit, Lord, to sharing the gospel with them. Or, God, I can't identify anybody in my life that I'm reasonably sure needs to know you, but if you'll bring somebody by and impress me that this is a person I probably need to mention Jesus to, I'll guarantee you, God, I commit myself, I'll say something about Jesus. I'll put in a good word for the Christ who loved me and gave himself for me. So this is our primary invitation today. If there are other decisions you need to make, this is the time for you to do it. This altar is open. This aisle is open. I don't know what God's been saying to you, but whatever it is, just say yes to him and do it. But the main thing I'm concerned with today is telling. Some of you would say, I've been a good sitter. I've been a good getter, but by God's grace, I'll be a teller. Would you pray with me, please?
The preceding message was presented by Mooringsport Baptist Church in Mooringsport, Louisiana. For more information about a relationship with Jesus Christ or about the church, including contact information, please go to our website, www.mooringsportbaptistchurch.org. Thank you for listening, and may God bless you.